This is a production of Cornell University.
And if we had to go by all the field representatives, then you would require a much higher attendance, and so this just makes sure that we'll advance the agenda of the GPSA, especially for things like the activity fee, which requires a two-thirds majority, and we need to have all members, all voting members present at the meeting that we set the activity. So the other reason for this, that voting members are tasked with being more informed than the average field representative. We expect them to take on leadership roles within the assembly and to make sure that they are more aware of the resolutions and initiatives that the GPSA is bringing forward. So the GPSA operates according to Robert's Rules of Order. In case you're wondering, they were originally written by a man named Robert, who had a particularly bad experience at a church meeting one day and felt that there needed to be a better, there had to be a better way to run a meeting of people than what sort of chaos that he was used to. And so he came up with Robert's Rules of Order. The basic premise is only one person speaks at a time, and so that person is said to have the floor. The chair has the floor in the meeting, and then I grant speaking, I give the floor to anyone else who wants to speak. And any member of the assembly does have the right to speak on a motion. And motions, any member may issue a motion, which for pretty much every motion we also require a second. And then after that, motions require both pass either a majority or two-thirds, depending on what kind of motion is being considered. Basically, resolutions are nothing more than a very formal motion that's been written up in a template. Once someone makes a motion, that motion is the thing that we'll be debating until the motion is either passed or tabled or something. There has to be some type of resolution to that motion before any other business can be considered. We can, of course, consider amendments to a motion, which is not usual. Typically, amendments are reserved for resolutions. Debate is officially settled by Robert's Rules when every member has had two chances to speak on a particular motion. However, you can end the debate early by a two-thirds vote of the voting members. So there was a question at the last meeting whether or not two-thirds vote is required. Officially, in the past, you could sort of just waive that portion of calling the question. Officially, we should be calling for a dissent. However, most of our resolutions passed by well over the two-thirds majority, so I wouldn't say that anything we've passed so far has been questionable with regards to our rule. No member may speak more than twice on a specific motion, and pretty much all the rules of debate can be modified again by two-thirds vote of the voting members. There can be a vote to limit debate so that we don't have to go around and have every member speak twice. Officially, field representatives count as members for this, so we don't have to go around and have every field representative speak twice before debate is over. So because that would take a very long time, and we probably have to go get through it in one regular set of meetings, we always close motions and resolutions that call into question. And if anyone has questions, stop me now or wait until you are. So, resolution. Resolution, as I said, is also a formally written up motion. And they have several different functions. A lot of our internal processes require formal resolutions to be written up and drafted, such as approving changes to charter bylaws, the activity fees, et cetera, et cetera. Another person's resolution is simply to communicate the sense of the body. If we feel that we want to say the GPSA approves or does not approve of any subjects, really, we can do that. We can issue a sort of sense of body resolution, or we can call for a change of policy outright from the administration. And this takes us right into the authority of the GPSA. These sections come to us from our charter, which is available online at the Assembly's website, our charter and bylaws, you can read them there in full. Our main authority covers the activity fee. We have the authority to make the recommendation on the activity fee, officially the recommendation that the President approves it. In practice, I don't think there's ever been a situation where the President did not approve an activity fee that we recommend. And finally, we have legislative authority over other policies. So basically, if the university wants to change a policy that impacts graduate professional school students, officially we have legislative authority to review that policy and issue our own recommendations. However, it is specifically tied towards non-academic policies, so our authority on academic policies is less than that of our authority over some other policies. And that distinction gets a little bit gray at times, but normally, with few exceptions, the administration sort of takes all of our resolutions under serious consideration. I've never had a resolution thrown out only because we didn't have official authority in that area. So that covers what our authority is.
So the authority to examine university policies, does that extend in any way to getting the required information we need to examine them?
Yes. So the president has the right to request information from the administration. However, sometimes the information may or may not be still confidential to myself and other administrators. That is a practice that we, last year we passed a resolution trying to change that practice and sort of open that up to the broader voting membership or the broader GTSA. Unfortunately, it was turned down by the administration because they felt the language within the resolution itself was too vague. That being said, there is normally, you know, before a policy is finalized, there will be some opportunity for review by more than just myself. Usually the other executive committee members will be brought in. Occasionally the advocacy committee will be brought in. But it is something that we were hoping to change last year to sort of make that information not necessarily public, but just sort of get a broader sense of the student body. So it's something that I would like to see changed, but that's just sort of how it stands right now. But I have never been told no whenever I request information, just from my own personal revision. I try to use that to guide the GTSA.
Can you elaborate a little more on what's the difference between the charter and the bylaws and why we have these two?
So the charter, this goes to my limited experience as a parliamentarian. As I understand it, the charter is meant to be sort of more written in stone, our bylaws and sort of set out our authority, our membership, sort of the general constitution. And the bylaws are our standard practices that we operate by. The bylaws are more fluid, much easier to change. For example, more than half of the charter actually requires presidential approval to a change, or the bylaws to change them as we fit. So the charter, for example, creates the position of president. The bylaws say exactly what the president does. Would be a good sort of example of the problem. Yeah. So one that we heard about at the start of this year was the resolution on tuition for advanced grad students in the sixth and seventh year who are paying their own way. This resolution was passed 3 years ago now?
Yeah, 3 years ago.
About 3 years ago, we passed the original resolution calling for a reduction in tuition. That was answered by the administration. I think a year later, the tuition for late stage students was lowered to $11,000 a year. We then passed another resolution calling for that tuition to be lowered still further because we still are not exactly competitive with our Ivy Plus peers. And it was still, as far as we could tell, more than what an individual student costs to the university in terms of keeping them around. So we passed another resolution and administration again agreed to lower the tuition to $3,500 a year now, which is where it stands as of now, which is actually very competitive with our Ivy Plus group for late-stage tuition for graduate students. That's just one of many examples of resolutions that we've passed that goes directly to policy at the university. Any other questions on resolutions? I will say that some critics of the current shared governance system will say that our resolutions are nothing more than powers to suggest. And while that is might be technically true, I'll say that suggestions are always taken very seriously by the administration and can affect serious change, as shown in the call for reduction of tuition.
Yeah, Richard. For a resolution to like take effect, would the president have to like approve it or sign off on it?
So that's a good question. Not all resolutions require presidential approval. If it is a resolution, for example, going to tuition, I don't believe the president even has authority over tuition. But the president can, you know, try and endorse it on our behalf to the Board of Trustees. For our charter, there are some things that explicitly need presidential approval, such as changes to Articles 1, 2, and 3 of the Charter, or to the activity fee, which again requires formal presidential approval. So it depends on the resolution. If we just sort of pass the resolution saying that, you know, trying to think of a not contentious example. for example, okay, so last year there was the sort of undercover video of Associate Dean, I believe, which supposedly had him saying that Cornell would accept ISIS on campus, which is of course ridiculous. It was a heavily edited video, and so we passed a resolution in support of that Associate Dean and condemning that particular video. So that was really a central body resolution. We have no authority in the hiring and dismissal of employees of the university. So, but, you know, still we felt important to show that the graduate student body stood behind a particular associate team. And that didn't require presidential approval. The president's court still took the resolution and, you know, I wouldn't say accepted the resolution because there's no changes, but he just sort of, you know, passed it along to other administrators. And it basically goes into the action listserv, which publicizes the official sense of the GCSA on an issue. So final bit of the GPSA is the Office of the Assembly. Without them, we couldn't do pretty much anything that we do. They support all the assemblies, not just us. They also support the employee assembly and the student assembly and the university assembly. I don't believe they support the faculty senate. No, so that one is its own entity. But they provide other clerks that take minutes at our general body meetings, and they handle all the logistics. And they also provide counsel on parliamentary procedure regarding documents that are requested, in addition to several other functions, just sort of be there to support the assemblies and make sure that we can carry out our mission on the campus. So that's the general overview of the GPSA and what we all do here. If there are any other questions, I'm happy to take them on what sort of, on anything in this presentation or any other questions on the GPSA I didn't cover.
Yeah. Just to verify, under what circumstances is the president required to respond to our resolution?
Officially, the president is required to respond within 30 days to all resolutions. So that is, as I understand it, still the official policy. Not all resolutions, I would say that not all resolutions require urgent response on behalf of the president. Like, for example, changes to our charter and bylaws were just made. Those didn't cover any section of the charter that the president has authority over, so there's really no requirement for a response from the president. There's response from the president that gets probably just something like, great to see you guys are, you know, looking at your charter bylaws so closely, good job. And that will be other resolutions, like resolution on tuition, that we will receive a much more in-depth response from that. And resolutions don't fully stop, in fact, they rarely stop at what the president says. It then falls to the president to continue that conversation with administrators and sort of make sure that that initiative is progressing along. Unless the president has simply stated that, you know, they don't feel it's going anywhere, and even if they do that, in certain cases, that wouldn't stop us from having authority to still push for that. It's just an area that the president doesn't have explicit authority over.
And does the response have to be public?
Yes, all responses are public, and they are on the assembly's website. Okay. So with that then, we'll go into reports of the officers and for the updates. So first the executive chair. Operations and staffing.
Operations and staffing met. We had just enough people to approve external committee positions. We approved quite a handful, somewhere between I think a third and a half, I can't remember exactly, but there's still plenty of spots available for everyone. Who didn't sign up for one, and there are definitely more people in the room right now than signed up for external committee positions. So I will send out another email with that link. I would encourage you to look at it again and get back to me. If you have questions about committees and stuff, you can still talk to me after this meeting. And then I think at our next meeting we'll motion to officially like accept everyone through. But everyone who's already been appointed, you're in the assembly's database and stuff, and so you should start going to those meetings.
Yeah, I'll definitely say when it comes to affecting policy, sometimes even more effective than resolutions are the liaisons to the various committees on campus that write policy in the first place. appropriations.
So we met with Casey, I think 8 of the 10 groups that will apply for violent funding. We'll meet with everyone by tomorrow. We should have a report within the next 10, 15 days, and then we'll be presenting our recommendation for the violent funded groups on October
6th. Yes.
There's no meeting forward.
Then communications, we'll hope the last semester for today. Finance Commission?
So the deadline for the October special review has passed last Friday. The Finance Commission will meet on Thursday, October 1st, to the budget, and hopefully everything will be approved by the week following after that. The next review cycle will be due at the last Friday of October, which I think is the 8th. So if you have any other questions.
So last week or a little over a week ago, we had our first meeting and a few issues were raised, including summer funding from the graduate school, housing, and the Maplewood Apartments replacements, and also the intellectual property form we all have to sign. So if any of you are interested in working on those issues or learning more about them, come to our next meeting, which hasn't been scheduled yet, but I'll email.
Okay,
back to
the award.
The risk of international students.
We haven't met since our last meeting, but our upcoming meeting is next Thursday, October 8th, from 12 to 1 and 3:21.
And finally, the program board.
Hi, everyone. So our first inter-school mixer was last week, and it ended up being a bit of a snafu, which was totally and completely my fault. But next time, it'll be much better, I promise. And I'm really sorry for anyone who had difficulties with the whole process. But like I said, it will improve.
Okay. With that, we will then move into new business. First up, we have elections. So there is currently a vacant voting member of our seat, so now I'll open the floor for nomination for volunteers to be voting member. Okay.
Can I nominate Sarah Hedgen? She accepts the nomination.
Okay. Are there any other volunteers or nominations?
Are we going to hear a bit about the nominees?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I didn't know if that came after they were nominated or...
Yeah,
before we vote for it.
Yes, this is to be scoped from full representatives to full voting members. Okay, what is your name?
And just as a side note, if you're elected as a voting member, this means that your field rep position becomes vacant. It's two separate things. No. It's okay. We can try and find something else, which is good.
Well, because I'll probably also
do a million handfuls. Don't let that stop you. We will help find someone for your school. I don't want that to be the thing I stop you.
K-A-R. All right. Any others? All right. Seeing none, I will close the court nominations. We will have 1 30-second statement each from each nominee, and then we will do an election by ballot. So. We'll go in order of nominations. So first up, Sarah.
Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm a third year in chemistry.
Where are you, Sarah?
I was a field representative last year. Didn't do much then, so I hope to change that.
Okay.
Thank you.
expensive.
Things like, oh,
how we apply for funding, but also for large populations. So that is the actual purpose of this.
So let's have that. We got physical sciences over here. We'll do biological sciences in that corner, so towards the front on either end. Humanities, take the center towards the bottom, and
Social sciences
go right in that corner. and special tools will be. Sure, special tools in the back. Volunteer from each section to sort of summarize any points that were made.
So one thing that we talked about is that there's definite interest in field-oriented otherwise. For a place that Proctor said that the definition of program would be more useful, that could include a roundtable series or some other sort of monthly series that's like, because it's not only that's purely social or fun, but this is all about roundtable workshop stuff, but the current definition of program is very interesting to the speaker, but it still has a very strong academic element, which might not be social either. So perhaps the friend is an official program would be the way to still have a sort of rigor and academic component of it. That was a discussion.
We sort of talked about how generally, just in our experience with our board and organization, while we do a lot of professional development and programming stuff, our social events are always more expensive because just per head, you get a lot more people at those and you have to buy more. So perhaps reallocating more money to the social budget would be helpful. We also talked about maybe seeing an example of a really good budget. And we also talked a lot about the special project fund. And for me, that was really helpful to know that it's unrestricted. You can request that for anything. And you just have to be ready to request it and work with a good budget. But yeah, I mean, I was surprised to hear that a lot of programs don't spend all their funds because we are always like short on funds and we definitely spend everything.
Any other sections that I would have to summarize this?
We are frustrated with WordThink. So that was our summary.
A very common
It's just the information is for some reason it still feels like it's not very accessible and the user interface is a little funky.
One other point is that we also spoke about maybe consolidating some of the groups, like for example, publication. Under program is also publicity and advertisement. So maybe if you have just put that 500 under that, you can do program funding and then you don't have to advertise for the school at a garden of it.
Publication is not necessarily like this person that pulls up and stuff. It's all actually putting out magazines and like books and that, not something that you can actually give out to students rather than advertising.
And I know for some schools that's probably necessary for their major. So if it's under publicity and advertising, they can use it. It's the same thing, right? Advertising and publicity.
It's a little bit different. It's not just trying to advertise the group. It's actually trying to put out like a journal. So that's not necessarily advertising, but to your point, it could conceivably be something that you program. So I guess it depends on how you define your program. But I wouldn't agree that it's publicity to put out a journal.
But it is true.
Not the same. I just mean that maybe it's informed that communication is about email communication.
I was going to say, though, if it is true, I think that the most groups who do apply for publication tend to be doing it as like advertising mode instead of. Some of the ones I've seen there, there's a misconception about what publication means. Just like from sports, you know. It's not really golf, but, you know, a social audience.
Okay.
I mean, we're a big school, and we have, we're one of the best schools in the world. I'm sure some schools need that, so we want to steal it away from them. But if you can merge it on the program, so that the schools that do use that fund have access to it, and the schools that, like my school, that don't need it, we can use it for a program or whatever.
I have a gentle comment. I work more with independent organizations than with field organizations. Right now, it's completely biased towards field. If I'm an independent organization, let's say I'm running a sports club, then I can't get any money. I can get $500 from this. And maybe if I host a program somewhere, then I can get some money for it. And this is like, you know, in, you have specific field funding that's restricted, which doesn't go to these organizations. And we are trying to make it more and more academic. But then the whole point of activity, I feel like slightly more social. And if it is academic programming, then that has to come from academic cost. Some organizations might want to be academic. That's fine. But then I don't know if all organizations fall under that gender. And I feel that it's kind of like, you know, wrong to like put everyone under the same umbrella. Right now it's completely academic.
I think sort of the converse is also true. Like, for example, I'm in computer science, and we get external speakers all the time, but like the department manages that and takes care of all that, and there's no reason why we would need $1,500 per year to bring in speakers. And it would be really nice if we could take, if we could say, look, we're not claiming any money from this $1,500 pool, can we get some more for some other category?
And that again goes to the point of loosening the restrictions of where exactly your money has to go. Because as you read this is what you, if you wanted to maximize your budget right now, you would have to spend the majority of your money on speakers, well, not just external speakers, on programs, which doesn't just necessarily mean speakers. That's a misconception that we discussed in our group, is that it's not necessarily, programming doesn't necessarily mean bringing in an outside speaker. There's other things that you do, like a reception, and that kind of production. It's just, it has to become open to the general community. It can't be specific to that one organization at that point. So I think we're now out of time for this, but
there's one more question.
Sorry.
I'm new, but I'm not a new student, and I also went to the orientation and did all the meetings. I still found it really a non-intuitive process of applying for funding, and so just to, like, just the recommendation to you guys, especially in the numbers, I heard there was a presentation that was not meant that I could find when I was, like, putting it for things. So maybe just, like, a little bit of the numbers about how to actually apply for it, because the field funding was just kind of like an enigmatic kind of concept anyway. Just, like, holding our hand a little bit more would be good, I think.
Yeah. And I think the general idea that, you know, going back to, I think, what most people are going here, is that if we are coming up with a number that is the cap that we're willing to give to organizations, right? So if we are really capping it at that number, there's no reason to enforce specifically what that money has to be spent for. And we can, I guess the only thing is that it then becomes really hard for the FC to decide what to give money to or not, because the guidelines for funding become a little more open to interpretation. So I guess that's the big.
So I guess with that, then we'll close this topic. And thank you, everyone, for the participation. Just as a sort of heads up to where this might go, I believe the Appropriations Committee officially has to make recommendations to change GTSALT guidelines. So I would ask them that.
Please, if you guys will figure out what works best for them, then come to us and then we can take that with our community officer on to if whatever they, because they are much more experienced in this matter. So I would rely on the chairman to report.
Also, you guys turned over to the chair in the spring, so
yeah,
it's always grateful, thank you. With that, moving to open forum. So one thing I have for open forum, policy 6.4, which is the policy which governs sexual harassment and other, it's not just sexual harassment, there's another category of policy in policy 6.4. It underwent major revision in response to a new law that was passed in New York State, and now those revisions are pending, and Ulysses, who is former president of the FAA, now works within the
inclusion office, I believe. He requested time to speak to us about this policy. Unfortunately, by the way that this policy is getting written, the only time that he can do that, and of course our activity key setting restrictions, would be October 5th, which is 1 week from today, which we obviously don't have an official meeting schedule. However, as per the charter, we are allowed to schedule extra meetings as long as 1 week's notice is given and two-thirds of the voting members approve it. So, at this time, I would request that we schedule an extra meeting. If we do not schedule an official extra meeting, then I would still probably schedule a meeting anyway. We would not have any official standing at the GCSA meeting of the semester. I will say I don't think that, first of all, they're simply asking for feedback, not for approval. So we don't need the ability to grant any sort of official approval. But I think it would be better to have it be an official meeting of the GCSA. The other option is they're presenting to the University Assembly next week. We have representation on the University Assembly, and those meetings are also open to the public if more people wanted to attend to that meeting. So with that, I would ask for the motion to schedule an extra meeting 1 week from today. Something to go along with Robert's Rules of Order breakdown, the chair is actually not supposed to make motions, and that's why you hear me say ask for motion a lot, it's because I'm not supposed to be able to make it.
I will make that motion.
Okay, so we have a motion. Is there a second?
Can I offer my opinion on
this? After the second, there will be time for debate of the motion for approval. So is there a second on the motion? All right, the motion is on the floor.
Can we have our UA representatives go to the meeting and give us like a brief summary report? Like, I don't know how well attended the meeting will be if we schedule it 1 week in advance. Because I know it, like, 1 week is a decent amount of time, but I mean, I know, like, my schedule is, like, already planned for next week. We do have UA representatives that are available.
I will say that they can be our voice in the, in this policy, but the presentation at the UA level will not be geared specifically to graduate students. That being said, I don't know how much it can be geared towards graduate students. How much it will actually end up being geared towards graduate students, even if we hold it. But that would be the one concern with having our input wrapped up with the UA. Also, we're only 1/4 that assembly. We're actually less than 1/4 of that assembly as the way it's constituted right now. That's another thing we're working on at the UA level. So our voice would not be, I don't think it'd be drowned out, but we might not have the time we want for input. Any other points on the motion?
Up until this year, I would say that on campus here, grad voices have been significantly underrepresented in the issue of sexual assault and harassment. Because of that, I would argue for having our own meeting next week and not relying on the UA. There are starting to be some university meetings and groups focused on how the policies apply to grad students, what resources are available to grad students. They're really just starting, I think, we want to be able to get our minds to it early in the process and shake up things as well.
Any other discussion? Seeing no other discussion, is there a motion to call a vote on the... Is there a second? Okay. Is there any dissent calling the vote and any debate? Seeing no dissent, then we shall vote by placard on whether or not to schedule an extra official meeting of the GCSA. If this motion is defeated, I will say we can still have that motion to have, I can still schedule a meeting. It just won't be an official GCSA meeting. Everyone will still be invited. The difference that makes is probably minimal. So now we will vote by placard. All those in favor of scheduling officially another GCSA meeting 1 week from today? This is limited voting members. The charter specifically says 2/3 of the voting members. All right, so there's 4 in favor, so without 2/3 majority, the motion is defeated.
Okay, defeated, never mind.
So this particular motion requires two-thirds majority. With that motion is defeated, would anyone be opposed to me scheduling a meeting for us? All will be invited to attend. It will not be an official GCSA meeting.
but because this is the purpose of listening to the proposal and providing feedback. Raise your hand if you attend such meetings. So it's kind of only from today at the same time. Okay.
I think it's a really important to kind of check that it wasn't an official meeting because I'm not here and I can't know that I would have been. But can you open up to the graduate school in general for non-official meetings? And that would be, I think it would be disrespectful to see where like 10 people show up, you know? And so I think that's far as community to be in touch.
I wholeheartedly agree, and instead of all of our meetings, the listeners open to the public anyway, but it of course would be disseminated to the listeners that we have that are, it'll be disseminated to public as possible. It'll probably be town hall style. So, yeah. Okay. So I'll schedule the meeting then. Yep.
So that's for same time next week?
Same time, 5:30 Monday. I hope, if you can attend, great. If not, then if you have any concerns, related to policy 6.4. I haven't seen the policy myself yet. I don't think anyone has or presented at that meeting. Then please email me any specific concerns you have related to that. I'll try to actually communicate it. So, anything else for open forum?
Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn for a second. All right. All those in favor of adjourning.